Yeah, recording.
We're rolling.
We're rolling.
We're rolling.
Welcome to another episode of the Inner Man Show. What's up, dude?
Hey, guys.
I want to get on this side. I want to see your face.
Feels like it's been like a month for me.
2 months since we've been in studio.
That's wild.
Yep.
It's been 2 months.
2 months since we've been in studio, and a lot has happened in these last 2 months. We got some new faces. Well, not really. You're not really a new face because you've been on the show before.
Yeah, a couple times.
Yep. But let's start with Brody, our new producer. He's kind of interim. He's, explain who you are and what you do, Brody.
Hey, well, I'm Brody, and I'm a recent SAIT graduate. I graduated last year in April of 2021, and I'm a creative mind, and I like to get my ideas out there. So as kind of a good starting stepping stone to bigger and better things and talking about stuff. So.
Yeah. We wanted to, you mentioned in dropping that you were looking to build your portfolio.
Yeah.
It's like, this is like perfect scenario,
totally.
A nonprofit. And then you volunteering, it's a win-win for everybody, man. We really appreciate this.
Yeah. Plus it's a goes toward something that I believe in too, about the whole mental health stuff. So yeah,
that's awesome, man.
Match made in heaven.
Absolutely. And how are you, man?
I'm not too bad. How are you doing?
That's bad.
What's new with you? It's been a minute since I've been on, isn't it?
It has been.
Yeah,
it's a year actually.
Years I've been on.
Yeah.
It's been like 6 months.
I came on with Rod a couple times.
Oh yeah, you were on with Rod too. I'm just thinking of the very first one.
Yeah. Very first one's been like a year since then.
No, you're on with Rod.
No, you know what? He was on with Rod, and I believe you were also on with Jesse.
Yes, you were on with Jesse.
Yeah, and
Matt St. Pierre. No.
No, Matt St. Pierre.
That's a different
one. Matt St. Pierre.
Holy smokes, we had too many.
And you were on with Rod twice.
I was on the one with the one where you guys interviewed Andrew, and I think one or two.
Oh, Andrew! Yeah. Good old Coatsies.
Right.
And what's new with you?
Oh, not much. We just finished our fourth session of intergenerational trauma treatment program, which has been fantastic. Our participants have been very engaged and very awesome. So, if for some reason you listen to this, thank you for being incredibly involved and participating. And it seems like you're enjoying it. So that's fantastic. So we have two more sessions left until completion. We don't really have a date set for our next one, but we're planning to do them quarterly if we can. So probably think in spring we'll fire up another one. And so if you're interested, just reach out to myself or the Inner Man page. And we will give you more information on that.
So. Yeah. The website is www.theinnermanproject.com. Facebook is www.facebook.com/theinnermanproject. Twitter and Instagram is @innermanyxh. And the new Instagram for YYC to get connected to Batman and Anthony is innermanyyc.
I guess I probably should mention too, is we're hopefully tentatively have Renee on for next week. So if you have any questions, I guess we should maybe put a post out on our Facebook because people won't hear this by the time that she's on. But any questions for Renee, that would be great. And we'll have her on and we'll talk about it. So if anything is unclear, then she will be able to answer those questions.
I'll quickly tell everybody who Renee is.
Renee is our lead in the intergenerational trauma. The only reason why we can do it is because she has her master's in sociology, not sociology,
social work.
Yeah, sorry. And she has plenty of years working with children. So those are the two things that are important when it comes to ITTM. She has completed this back in, I want to say 2007, the first time, and then she re-upped recently with myself. And she's completed the program. I think she's delivered it to over 20 groups.
It's lots of experience.
She's done a very job. She's excellent to talk to. And I know Ted's went through the program kind of when we piloted it the first time, and he enjoyed that as well. So
you guys presented it really well. And like, I really wanted to see the next piece of it. I just, not the opportunity right now.
Yeah.
But no, I really enjoyed and took a lot out of it.
Yeah.
You kept saying Renee, and I'm like, I may not know who Renee is, but new listeners, maybe just tell them who
fair.
She is.
No, that's fair enough. And we actually planned on having all the people come in that were in the first time to actually sit in for free again for our next one. But since we have to run it through Zoom for the first few sessions, it didn't really work out. But maybe we'll roll that for our next one. So we'll keep that option open for the participants in the very first one if they want.
I'm definitely down for that.
Yeah.
Well, that's great. I'm glad it's going good. We've had so many people reach out to us on social media regarding the ITTM program. I'm very pleased to see that the community is really interested in such a valuable experience. Really, that's what it is, right?
Yeah, 100%. It's I've said it before, I'll say it again, and I truly 100% believe in this program. It's helped me through my own traumas and things that, and inadvertently, I was doing it for training.
Right.
So through my training, I've learned a lot about myself and why I react the way I do to certain situations and how to understand them when they're coming and how to stop them before they escalate.
Right.
So those are very valuable tools, especially for an individual who was very angry in the past. You know, I still have my moments, but they're very few and far between, and they're not as escalated as they have been in the past.
In the last 17 months of knowing you, you've done like almost a 180 in terms of your internal anger too.
Totally.
Cause you'd call me about things that you were upset about. And now I don't get it at all.
Yeah.
Which is a great thing. That's when you can have a moment where like that, where somebody close to you in your life is like, hey man, like you're making some changes, some good changes. That's a good thing, man.
No, I appreciate it. And it, I mean, it's a testament to what we do at the Innerman. You know, our drop-in groups are great, and Ted leading them, he's doing a fantastic job. So thanks for doing that, Ted. And through ITTM, like that's this, I guess one of the a success story. And even though I have a hand in starting this, I'm a success story in how I've, you know, grown emotionally and, you know, mentally through the last 17, 18 months. So
you want to touch base on that for a quick second?
Yeah.
I know when we first kind of started dropping groups, you always kind of felt like you were slightly emotionally disconnected.
Totally.
Do you feel a lot better than that aspect 100%, now?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm more with the group than feel like I'm just talking to a group.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm. So that's, yeah, that's part of the process. That's, you know, kind of the healing that I've had over like the last little bit.
Well, you really had to disconnect with the career that you were
in. Leaving the job that I'm at has been a mental break myself. Like I just made a lot of right decisions that's helped me out in the last little bit. So
there's something you mentioned a lot in the past. I've actually been meaning to ask you for a while if you felt like you had some growth there. Cause I feel like you had.
Yeah.
So it's just nice to actually hear that you actually really have seen the growth for yourself.
Totally. Yeah. Like, and I'll mention it now, and I have said it in the past, and like, it almost felt like a burden, but it wasn't this, that was a burden to me. It was everything that was going on in my head. That was a burden to me. So, totally. But now it's been spun as a positive, and it helps me as much as I think that I help others with whatever. And, it's been great. The last 3 or 4 months have been really moments of clarity and feeling better.
There's one of those fun moments to actually look back and see how far all of us have come since we first sat down and started the Innerman.
Yeah.
Right? Because like all of us that are around have like changed so drastically much.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In a positive way.
Yeah. Yeah. I just actually went through, I was moving. Moving one of my kids up to my office and moving my office because they want to switch bedrooms. That's the beauty of being a parent. And I was like, oh, hey, my journals. And it said 2019, 2020. And I just skimmed to the back of it. I'm like, wow, that's some growth, man.
Yeah.
Like that's one of those moments where like, oh, I can really pat myself on the back because I said what I was going to do. And then I went and did it. And then I accomplished that. And not only did I accomplish it, but I was able to surround myself with people who want to see me succeed. You send me messages at least 2 or 3 times a week. You talk to me all the time and in text message. And it's nice to have people in your corner that want to do that. Right.
Totally. So,
a few housekeeping things that I want to touch on. I've had 3 professionals just today reach out to me. No, the Innerman Project, is not part of the Southern Alberta Regional Suicide Prevention Council.
Yes.
We were a part of, coalition. We were a part of the coalition last year for a hot minute. We applied to the Roots of Hope, but we are not involved with Roots of Hope this year. The Southern Alberta Suicide Prevention Coalition received the Roots of Hope this year. So congratulations to them.
That's awesome.
But we never put in an application for it. We felt with ITTM that we wanted to kind of stay in our own lane and provide a resource that the city didn't have. And because of that, we're actually, you know, we're in that referral business now.
Yeah.
We're able to send people to McMahon. We're able to send people to the Root Cellar and to different organizations and have them in turn ask us for the training or ask us to send people. So it's a, we wanted to focus on what we can do immediately in the city. And I think the ITTM was the best move forward. So,
yeah.
And that just goes to the testament of the amount of people that are reaching out to us about the program. So, but today, guys, I want to get right onto a few topics. The first one that I want to touch on, I actually wanted to kind of do this in reverse, there's been this push on social media that I've seen. Before I go into that, what I will say is, there's at least three of us. I don't know if you've had incidences in your past about this, but I know all three of us have struggled with excessive eating or excessive cardio or pushing our body to limits because we were at the other extreme. I've been to the point of starving myself on drugs. You were overweight in high school. You overcame that. I know that you've had issues with just being an athlete, you know, having that body dysmorphia and feeling like, oh, now I've gained 40, 50, 60 pounds after college. And
in a year.
Yeah. In a year, right? Yeah. So I want to start off by saying that. And then the other thing I want to say too is there's two individuals in here, three individuals. I'm not too sure of your sports background. Three athletes in here and two certified personal trainers in here about to have this discussion. So I don't want to discount and make people feel uncomfortable, but I've seen this big push in social media regarding fat phobia in the fitness industry. And I want to start with you, Ted. What's your synopsis on this? We kind of ran through it a little bit before the program here. And, you know, my biggest concern is that we're sending the wrong message to people who are struggling with food addiction and so on and so forth.
Yeah. That's the thing, like, you keep saying fat phobia. I feel like it's more of like a fat acceptance movement. Because people are always saying the fact that, like, you know, love your body no matter how it is. Now, as you guys know, I'm a personal trainer and I work with people of all different levels. And it's a hard one because I do believe you have to love your body, but you also have to take care of your body. You have to make sure your body's healthy and doing the right things for it. And let's be honest, when you're morbidly obese, like, there are countless studies out there that if you're morbidly obese, your body's not healthy. That much extra fat in the body causes issues for heart, liver, lungs, blood pressure. I've had clients where literally I've just helped them like work out, not even lose that much weight, but just get like a healthy recalibration of their body. Mm-hmm. And they've come off high blood pressure medications and then their cholesterol is back to normal.
Yeah.
A lot of that's from movement, but part of the issue is like having too much fat. Cause like a lot of them, I just like put a bit more muscle on them and their doctors have been like, yeah, get off your meds. You don't need them anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
And just to add on top of what you said, Ted, is, you know, all of those, you know, problems that you're going to get physically, that's going to manifest in the mental side of things too. So not only are you not taking care of your physical health, it's going to affect you mentally too, one way or another.
I can't remember. There was I feel like plus size isn't the right term. I know what plus size is. It was like an extreme plus size model a couple of years ago who went, I can't remember who she was. And she went on this statement saying, oh, I'm healthy. And then suddenly died like the age of like 35. You guys remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know
what
you're talking
about. I can't remember her name at all. And then recently, how am I going to get backlash for bringing this up? But like Tess Holliday, she went this whole statement that saying she's anorexic, but she weighs like, I think like 400 pounds.
Mm-hmm. She identifies as anorexic.
She identifies as anorexic right now.
That's really sad.
And for anyone who's actually suffering from anorexia, like I do believe she has an eating disorder. I have no doubt about that.
Sure.
And if people want to talk to me about it, I'll happily sit down with anybody that wants to discuss this. Mm-hmm. But for people that are really suffering from anorexia, because like I've known sufferers, I've seen people do it, like I've seen people in hospital suffering from it. It's a terrifying disease. Mm-hmm. And then when you see someone who weighs like 68 pounds as an adult,
yep,
that's terrifying to see. Yep.
Well, it's terrifying for them too. Like I started out in my personal training in a career. I was working in a big box gym. The very first client that ever came to me, she was a walk-in. She came off the street. She had been to the doctor that afternoon and her mom said, enough is enough. You're going to get a personal trainer. You're going to get a gym membership, so on and so forth. I won't say her name, but she was 17 years old and she was 510 pounds. Our workouts, the first 3 months, were walking around the main floor of the gym, holding dumbbells, getting her to sit up and down, walk up maybe one or two stairs, get her moving. I think in 3 months she lost like 70 or 80 pounds just from moving. She didn't change her diet. She didn't just from moving.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you see somebody like that, it was kind of the same thing with what you're saying. She was on blood pressure medications at 17 and she was diabetic. And it was like, I trained her for almost 2 years. And by the end of the 2 years, she lost just over 200 pounds, you know, and she'd come off all those medications, you know.
How did she feel afterwards?
No, she was confident.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. And I think people misinterpret what self-love is. Like, self-love isn't supposed to be soaking your feet in a bubble bath, you know, reading a Cosmopolitan, which is one of the photos that I've shown you. No, self-love means you're going to have to push yourself. You're going to have to get out of the comfort zone. What you always say, right? You get comfortable being uncomfortable. And if you want to see a change and you want to feel healthy and feel happy, when you start losing weight and you feel good about yourself, when you look in the mirror and you start seeing a smile because you started losing weight and you start feeling better about the clothes that you're all of a sudden going from a 4X down to a 2X down to an XL. Holy moly, man, the confidence that radiates out of people. And you can tell the people that are severely unhappy with themselves. And I think that's the biggest thing that we need to consider here is insecurity of the self.
So right. I want to touch base on two personal stories of weight loss. Because like you're right, I was fat back in like high school and college, but I got fat again. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to touch base the first time.
Heavy twice.
Yeah, twice. Yeah. The first time was extremely heavy. Mm-hmm. So the first time was, I was in college. I weighed myself, stepped on the scale, and I was about 260 pounds. And I know you've seen the photo. I think you have.
Yep.
You probably have it. I can show you later. but like, it was all belly. Like, I remember sitting in front of my computer desk, playing World of Warcraft. Cause I was like, you know, 19 with my buddy playing with Warcraft. And I just finished off a frozen pizza and there's like Pepsi cans surrounding me.
Yep.
And I was newly single too. And I look at my buddy, I'm like, oh man, I gotta lose some shape. I can't get back in the dating field looking like this.
Yeah.
And so I started my basement, started slow. Didn't know much about dieting, didn't exercise. I just grabbed like those at home workout things.
Started moving.
I did them. Yeah, I did them. Like, I started cleaning up my diet. Of course, I realized now that I wasn't going the right approach. Too many salads, not enough protein. Mm-hmm. And
that's like the most common mistake.
Yeah.
That's what people think. That's what people think losing weight is. I'll just eat salads.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. That's what I did.
Yeah. And take the stairs.
Yeah. So I got myself down from 260 to 220. I just felt better. Yep. And it kind of started the journey. And then I competed in 2016 and I weighed 207 pounds in 2016. And that was the same show we did together. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I was muscle and sinew. Mm-hmm. Like, my BMI said I should be 190. If I was 190 that day, I would have died. Mm-hmm. Like, I was lean. And then I competed, took fourth place. And the
plan was like the leanest at that show.
Yeah, I was shredded. Yeah. That's the one time I will say I was like the most shredded I've ever been. Yeah. And so I left that day, talked to my trainer, I'm like, yeah, am I going to keep going? Then after about a month, I was like, you know what? I'm not big enough. Like, I'm so tall. I got to be so much bigger to be on stage. So I kind of just like, I'm going to walk away. Mm-hmm. I'm going to walk away right now. I made a thing saying I'll compete again when I'm 30. Mm-hmm. So I started just like stop caring my diet and just kind of eating whatever. Try to like eat within my like try to like focus on food, but not really focus. Mm-hmm. Now I will also admit there was a third factor to this. This is the year I got my prescription for medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. At 27, I had never smoked before. Munchies are a real thing. Maybe I shouldn't talk with that, but I'm just gonna be honest about it. Mm-hmm. And so 13 months later, so I competed in July, I think it was.
Yeah, we competed at the end of June.
Yeah. So then I think it was the end of July or August the following year, I stepped on the scale. And because I hadn't been working, I'd still been kind of going to the gym, but not taking it seriously, skipping a lot of days.
Sure.
I was eating everything I possibly could. Yeah. I was 305 pounds. Mm-hmm. So I gained 100 pounds. About 100 pounds in 13 months.
It doesn't take much for it to just.
Well, how much did you gain? You gained what, 60 or 70?
60 pounds in a year. Yeah.
That's wild, man.
And I was like, oh, I'm doing good. But like when I got back from a trip, and I was at West 7th Mall. Walking was hard, mm-hmm. like hard. Like I was struggling to walk and it was just brutal. And that's when I got back in shape again. And I remember thinking, why did I let myself get there? Mm-hmm. Like I was so unhealthy, so unhappy. Like I was masking my unhappiness with food. Like mm-hmm. I was back in my food addiction days and not focusing.
Totally.
And then letting like just weed be a crutch for everything. Cause every time I'm sad, I'm just going to smoke a little bit. So I smoke, I eat, smoke, I eat, smoke, I eat. wake up, get depressed. And then like, I mean, like this last little while, like we got me up for like 280 pounds. I feel light as a feather, but like I'm a much healthier way. I got less body fat on me, got more muscle on me. And don't get me wrong, holding that much muscle is still a lot of weight.
Yeah, yeah. And considering your diet too, diet's phenomenal.
Yeah. Yeah. You're eating clean, you're working out, you're doing the things that take care of yourself, right?
Taking a lot of food, but I mean healthy, clean food.
Yeah.
So I've been there twice. And both times looking back, I just kind of like, wow, as happy as I thought I was, as much as I thought I was okay with where I was doing, I was so not. Yeah. It was miserable.
Yeah. And here's the thing that I'll say is this, like, I don't know if I've ever actually told you this. Actually, I mean, you might have heard some of my story when we were talking to Amber Romaniak.
Oh, yeah.
When I was in high school, I would go to the gym at 5 a.m. I would drive to the gym, go to the Y, and I'd run for an hour straight, have a shower there, get ready, go to school. I wouldn't basically eat all day. I'd eat chicken and almonds. And then I would have a Monster energy drink. I would do rugby practice or whatever sport I was playing. And then I would go crush something to eat quick.
Sorry, I got to ask one question. Was it a Monster or was it like a Jolt back in the day?
No.
It was one of those Monsters just came out.
Oh, those Monsters. Okay.
Yeah.
Like the green. That's like, he just crushed 90 grams of sugar, baby. Yeah.
with timeline. I remember high school, the Jolt energy drinks.
Yeah.
You drink one, those. You're like, yeah.
Jolt cola. Yeah. Yeah.
So I would crush a Monster. I'd go to practice. After practice, I would do another Monster and then I would go to the gym and I would either take a pre-workout and a protein shake. And then I'd go lift for an hour or two and I'd be home by 8:30, 9:00. And then on my way home, I would go crush 4 or 5 McDoubles because McDonald's was way out to my parents' place.
Yeah.
And it was that way for anywhere from in grade 11 and grade 12, anywhere from 6 to 8 months straight. And it was, I was battling this. I would go home and get upset at myself that I ate McDonald's. And then I would wake up in the morning and like pinch my stomach and think to myself, I shouldn't have done that. I'm an athlete. What was I doing? And then you were just so ravenous and hungry and you're a 16-year-old boy with testosterone flow and you just finished smashing dudes for like the last 2 hours on the pitch. And you're like, oh, I'm going to go eat some junk food, you know? And it's just, I got to a point where between my graduating year of high school and my second year of college, so in that 14 months, I went from 190 pounds to about 275. And I was so unhealthy because I hadn't started my bodybuilding journey. I hadn't started using steroids at that point in time. So it was hefty fat. It was
bad food.
Bad food. And I was so unhealthy. And there was a point in 2020, at the beginning of 2020, I think it was March 2020. I hadn't been in the gym in probably a year and 3 or 4 months. I took after the 2018 show, I took second at the 2018 show in Alberta's. And I said, I'm going to, basically what was happening, I was overeating myself. I started developing kidney issues and it was basically from over consuming food. You know, there's only a point in your life where you can start taking 8,000 calories a day. And it was just like, I couldn't do it anymore. It's like my body was failing
for me.
Yeah. Well, and like, I always had a high metabolism, right? So it was like I've said my diet before, it was crazy. Yeah. And then I remember going to my doctor. My doctor looked at me. He's like, you're going to have a heart attack. I was like, I go to the gym. I'm doing cardio. He's like, your blood work doesn't tell us that.
Yeah. And you're crushing all the caffeine in the world.
I was crushing steroids. I was destroying my body because I thought it was supposed to be, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z. I'm going to eat healthy. I'm going to lift weights. I'm going to do cardio. I'm going to take care of my health.
And I'll be healthy.
Yeah. But then it came to a point when you realize that your body can't handle certain things. And that's what we're seeing with this, this body acceptance is we're not talking about whether you accept your body for who you are. We're accepting the fact that you're internally and externally, it's like your body's decaying when you get that heavy and unhealthy.
Well, let me segue here for a small second. Okay. Mm-hmm. So you have McDoubles every night. Now, if you look back at the Maslow's food pyramid, where we're all taught how to eat in high school, that wouldn't be that far off,
right?
You get like your 7 servings of grains and like,
yeah, you got your grains, you got your protein, you got your dairy,
a little bit of cheese. Yeah. That would say like, oh, this is perfectly healthy food.
Pickle and onion vegetables.
Now, for those of you that don't know, the Maslow's food pyramid has been disproven and they actually, remember who paid for it?
No. I'm thinking of the sugar industry. I was just about to say Coca-Cola, but that was to disprove fat. Yeah, it was to
Maslow's Food Pyramid was paid for, like, was it dairy companies?
I believe so. But yeah, it was they were paid off.
They're paid off. So this is something that schools have lived with for years. Yeah. And did you learn about Maslow's Food Pyramid in school, or is that gone now?
Well, I learned about like the Canada's Food Guide.
Okay, yeah, same idea. Thing. It's based off Maslow's Food Pyramid. And so this is something that we learned. So like, yeah, in high school, you have no idea what you're supposed to be eating and what's healthy. Yeah. Like I remember, and probably the same thing for you, when you first get into it, actually have to learn. You're like, oh, I'm so far off. Like I have no idea. Then people think you're being unhealthy for what you're doing, when you're just actually eating the way you're supposed to be eating.
Eat this loaf of bread, drink this 2 liters of milk, and crush a block of cheese,
and go to bed.
Have maybe like, you know, a burger patty.
Yeah, right.
Maybe.
But you know what's crazy about this conversation? So we're talking about, you know, getting overweight. You're talking about gaining excess body fat twice in your life. I've been to the point where I was so heavy fat wise and so heavy muscular wise that I was decaying from the inside out. So what's the synopsis in what we're talking about? It is not healthy to be extremely overweight. It just isn't.
It's not healthy on your organs, and it's not healthy mentally. Mm-hmm. There are so many studies out there linking diet, like healthy eating, exercise to better mental health, clarity, lack of curing depression, curing anxiety,
life longevity.
Yeah.
Like, we're not telling you that you need to be shredded, jacked, whatever it might be. We're just telling you that you need to take care of what you're eating, putting in your body. You know, you're allowed to treat yourself every now and again, but put better things in more than you're not.
So let's reverse roles here. Let's play devil's advocate. I want to hear your guys' thoughts and opinions on this. The counter argument is food addiction is a mental health, and that we can't judge people based on their mental health and their addictions.
Okay. I'll go first with this one easily. Food addiction is a mental health issue. Mm-hmm. What do you tell someone with depression? Mm-hmm. What do you tell them?
Well, there's a few things, but the basic...
What is accepted?
What is accepted? Oh, it's okay not to be okay.
It's going to be okay. Have you talked to your doctor?
Yeah.
Have you talked to someone? Have you considered medication? Mm-hmm. But...
Do you need support?
Yeah. What can I
someone
do?
To talk to
what
you.
Can I do? But if someone's... the battling food addiction, and you say to them, hey, talk to your doctor about your addiction. Mm-hmm. Have you considered seeking treatment? Mm-hmm. Have you considered talking to a therapist? You are the asshole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's weird, isn't it?
Yeah. Whereas like quick story for you. I told you about it. I went to Costco 2 summers ago in a tank top, and I was grabbing my chicken rice, keeping myself. And I had a family openly mock me in Costco for being muscular. Mm-hmm. That was very acceptable. Mm-hmm. But if I had been a 400-pound person and they had laughed at me for waddling, I guarantee people would have stepped in and had an issue with
it. Can I ask you what shape the family was in?
Average.
So just average, average family.
The two daughters were like, you know, I'm guessing like 16 and like 14, like... Hmm. Like skinny blonde girls, the dad was like, not overweight, not underweight, not muscular, just very average, best I can say.
Average Joe.
Yeah. And I realized I was probably standing there about like, you know, 6'2", probably about 260 pounds. And I'm a large person. I just come from the gym, probably wearing like a tee back. Mm-hmm. So like, I'm showing a decent amount of muscle, but like I felt severely ashamed to go out in public at that point in time when I was just trying to buy my groceries.
Right.
And that's someone who was in shape and took care of themselves.
Yeah.
And he felt bad for doing that.
Yeah. And so it's just, and that's
body shaming goes both ways.
Yeah. And that's what gets me right now is the fact that, and I'm not saying we should ever body shame someone who is morbidly obese. Yeah. Like there is, you're right. It is a mental issue there, mm-hmm. or a mental issue, food addiction. Like there's something going on there, or else they just haven't been taught the right way they should be eating and how to take care of themselves. Some people really haven't.
Yeah. And well, going back to our conversation with that 600 pound life before the program started, but the number one thing that these people talk about is the trauma that they're suffering from childhood. Mm-hmm. Like every single one of these people that you see on this show are suffering from some sort of childhood issue, some sort of traumatic issue, PTSD, depression, you name it, which goes to my next point. So first of all, what do you think about this? Because when I think of this, I think this is a mental health issue.
100%.
The other thing that I'll say to this is fat phobia, in my experience in the fitness industry, and I've been to literally hundreds of gyms, I've worked for two big box companies. I own my own company. I was in a private gym in Calgary. I think I can count on one hand how many times I've seen somebody make fun of somebody who's overweight. And I'm telling you guys, every single time it happened, staff took care of it. Absolutely. Immediately. Yep. They kicked those people out immediately.
Hell, I remember back at training at old box gym. I remember that there's one bigger girl and she came in like every day and got on the step mill. And I remember one day I went on step mill. I'm like, you know what? I see her every day putting the work in. Mm-hmm. I just think you're awesome. Like you're here working so hard and like we became friends. Mm-hmm. So I was just, it was awesome to see someone actually like making an effort. Cause a lot of people go to the gym and like they're in decent shape and they kind of, they go in, it's a social thing for them. Yeah. But there was this girl and you could tell she was like,
she was wanting a change
and she seemed unsure of herself.
Yeah.
And like, I know for years later and like she became like a gym regular. She started knowing everybody and like being like very happy and accepting with herself.
Yeah.
As also to make that change, but I know she was nervous. Yeah. I just want to tell her like, I'm like, you're doing awesome right now.
It's nice to build that community and have those people have your back and, you know, having someone say something nice to you.
Yeah.
But I've also experienced scenarios similar to that, which was met with hostility. Cause I thought that they've been so used to someone making fun of them so bad. Mm-hmm. They just assumed that that's what I was doing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And like, it was almost like a knee jerk reaction. Like, well, screw you then. I was trying to be nice, but
yeah,
that wasn't. And knowing what I know now, I would have been like, oh, you just have been picked on and I should have dug deeper and just said, I'm actually honestly like happy that you're doing what you're doing.
It's probably all they ever gotten before.
Yeah. And that's my next point is most of the criticism people who are obese get is from outside of the gym.
Oh yeah.
100%. And I'm going to be the first to tell you as speaking for our gender here, gentlemen, it is usually insecure men who are making fun of, and it's usually overweight women.
Absolutely.
I don't know about you guys, but dudes fat shaming each other. It's pretty simple. Like, hey Tubbs, like, come on. And then you're like, oh, I'm Tubbs. And then we have a conversation about how you need to get a gym membership.
Yeah.
But it's usually insecure men who make fun of women or insecure women who, and I've seen this before where you get that catty clicky type of lady who's a part of a group or a friend circle that make fun of other women. Right.
Yeah.
So there is that, but that is a big issue too. So, but that's not the fitness industry, guys.
No.
That's not the.
That's just people.
That's just assholes.
Yep. Yeah. Just people.
We're talking about people with insecurity. That is so. When that part of the conversation comes up, that is 100% correct. Yes, there's insecurities. Yes, there are people who will make fun of obese people and heavy people.
But so a lot of it, I think, does come from like Hollywood and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Because there's so many movies, and especially like any movie where this person's like, you know, was fat and got fit, where it shows them like, you know, going to a gym and getting shamed. Going to the gym and getting shamed, and social media, everything is so prevalent that gets really
Dodgeball.
Yes.
Yep.
The movie Dodgeball.
Totally. Yeah.
It's hilarious, but that is not a representation of the gym. It's never been, in my opinion.
No, like it's actually like the average Joe's. Mm-hmm. That is the representation that a gym should be. Well, and that is for the most part.
That is, in my opinion, the real representation, especially like at the very end of the movie where it's like, hey, you're great the way you are.
Yeah.
But if you're not quite satisfied with who we are right now physically, come talk to us.
Yeah.
And I love that mentality.
Yeah.
And like, cause it is a thing where because of like Hollywood's bias, it creates all these people that are too scared to go to a gym for a certain reason. Some people are overweight. Some people feel like they're too old. Mm-hmm. Some people feel like they're just like too held back and they don't want to go to a gym.
Well, so I'll nail your point on the head. Personally, myself, I'm going to a big box gym right now. I don't want to go because it's a big box gym. Yeah. I feel uncomfortable. I'm generally an in shape guy. I generally know what I'm doing for the most part, but it is an uneasy feeling going in there. And you do feel judged. You do feel like people are looking at you when they're probably not.
When I first,
what other options are then?
Glad you could ask.
Whole cut plug.
So I'm going to say like same thing. When I first started going to gym when I was about like in high school, I felt so awkward and insecure. Yep. And then like, it's hard to like ask anybody. Now, the one rule I want to give quickly before I get anything else is that if you're ever unsure about what you're doing in the gym, unsure about exercise, anything like that, go find the biggest, angriest looking guy you can find in the gym and politely ask to talk to him.
Yeah. And I'm every time
the big guys are big teddy bears. Mm-hmm. It's the guys that look like
Ted's.
heads. it's the guys that, like, you know, are spray tanned and like look at their abs every 5 seconds. Those are the guys you don't want to talk to at a gym, because they are just there for themselves and carry through anything else. The ones that are like the really big guys that look like almost too scary to talk to are usually the guys that have put the time in, put the work, understand what they're doing, want to see people succeed because they know how hard it is to get where they're
at. Usually they're wearing a hoodie.
And aside from, you know, the tips that I've gotten from you two over the last little bit here, the people that do approach me are usually those kind of gentlemen. And I welcome it. Some people get mad and I don't understand why. I'm like, this person just genuinely cares. He took time out of his day to tell me that I'm doing something wrong or a better way to do something. Why wouldn't you take that advice? Yeah, clearly they know what they're doing.
The one time I'd ever go up to somebody in the gym and approach someone is if I felt like they were doing something, if I didn't know them, I felt like they were doing something slightly dangerous and I didn't want to see an injury happen when I could have.
And I think that's generally what would happen is they seen that my form was off and they'd be like, hey, try this or whatever. Right.
Could you imagine you're at a skating rink? We're at the leisure center and you've never skated before. And former WHL Medicine Hat Tiger, Matt Keatley, comes up to you and you're like, hey man, here's some tips on how to skate better. And you're like, who the hell is this guy? And then you walk away and you're like, he was almost a professional. He was drafted.
He played a few professional games.
That's kind of the mentality people have about the gym. It's just like, you look at us and we've been on that. We've been nationally ranked. So we're almost at the professional level where we see as somebody who's about to hurt themselves. The first thing I'm doing is running over. If I see Brody doing something with the cables, I'm like, hey, cool. Slow down. Okay.
And that's the thing, I don't know about you, but I always walk over and I'm always like, hey, do you mind if I give you some advice? Yeah. And I've been brushed with fuck off before. Yeah. I have. So I really got to stop swearing the show. Okay. I've been brushed out before. Okay. And sometimes like, hey, you know what? I tried. But if you don't want advice, that's fine. I even tell people when I give them advice, I'm like, this is just the way like I think it should be done. If you don't want to disregard everything I say, that's fine too. Yeah. But no, like I'm just jumping back a little bit. Like you're right. Like it is hard for people to enter a gym when they are feel like they're overweight. And some people that feel like they're overweight really aren't. And so actually
just in Shane's case, what you were saying. You haven't been to the gym in 2 months.
Yeah.
It was just literally, you hadn't been to the gym in 2 months and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. I mean, aside from my own excuses that I'd make a lot of times, which is on me, understand that. And I'm going to fix that. But yeah, a big deterrent is actually just going back and like having to see those same people that I've seen for a little bit. And they're just like, and I don't know if it's a big box mentality. Maybe it's in my head. I don't know. But like, I just feel like there'll be a full clear area and all of a sudden I'll be there and then I'm swarmed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And like some people don't want to go to the gym because if they're out of shape, don't know what they're doing. Some people don't even want to hire trainers. They think they're going to look foolish. They're paying someone to teach them what they're doing. And I realized this is a big issue a while back. And so like during second round of COVID, like during second shutdowns, I had the idea, like, why does no one here own a private gym?
Right.
Like in a lot of big cities, you see it. Yeah. And so I spent the next 7 months opening my own private gym. Mm-hmm. And my mentality was, this is going to be a gym for anybody who does not want to go to a standard gym. Yeah. And I got some clients that just like, they're older and they're some are professionals that just like, they have a professional conduct to maintain. They don't want to be in a box gym, like sweating, like lying on the floor, tired and stuff like that. And I have some people that are overweight and don't feel comfortable in a standard gym. Sure. So I opened up my gym. So that people can come and work with the gym.
Let's give them a plug here. Let's go.
Where can the people find you?
My gym is called the Hall Cut, owned by Ted Finkelman, the Hebrew Hulk. This place
looks sweet. Brody's smiling over here.
It's pretty dope.
Best way to find me is you can go to HebrewHulkFitness.com. Or if you search the word Hebrew Hulk or Hulk Cut, you should be taken right to my Instagram page. The Facebook page still called Ted Finkelman. I'm trying to fix it, but Facebook's a little tricky to deal with, but if you search the name Hebrew Hulk or the Hulk Cut, you should be directed to me and feel free to call me and let's set up a free consult to see what we can do. And I do one-on-one and online training for anybody looking, and there is really no one I won't work with. If you're overweight, injured, whatever it is, I'll get you sorted out.
And here's what I'll say about Ted. He is the nicest guy I think I've met. And he will not make you feel uncomfortable in any way.
Thank you, Shane. That was worth the $500 I gave you earlier.
What?
The next point I want to hammer home with this. So we've touched on that the insecurity is there with people who suffer from obesity and who are dealing with obesity. We understand that the gym can be an uncomfortable environment, but if you do go, look for the more experienced people. Yep. Look for people that know what they're doing. Don't be afraid to to touch base with him. And if not, try to find yourself a personal gym like Ted's.
And just one thing I want to throw out there as a personal trainer, because this is one thing I feel people get wrong. People think I need to get in shape first before I hire the
trainer. That's the point of getting a personal trainer. Yeah.
And that's what you get in shape and then you go on your own.
I put those out there first because most people's like, they either don't get the results they're looking for or else they end up injuring themselves really early on.
Right.
Whereas if you start with a personal trainer and learn the basic fundamentals of what you should be doing, proper eating, if it's the right trainer that does that, and proper training and like basic movement patterns, you're more likely to get better results and not injure yourself and actually stay at it for a better long term.
And someone to be honest with you and say, well, you'll have a quick fix in 30 days, you lose 30 pounds. Yep. That bull crap. That's not possible.
I've trained some guys that like back in college, they were like sports stars. Yeah. And I've literally had them lift something and be like, okay, well, that sucked. Now let's break this down, start from scratch and make it better. It'll make you stronger.
Yeah. Totally. Then the other point I want to touch on here is we have the Inner Man Instagram. I'm seeing a giant push from mental health professionals saying that this is okay. And in my opinion, you're talking about most of the time people with some sort of food addiction or traumatic issues in their life that they're not handling well. And I'm all for bringing awareness and having conversations about mental health. If we suffer from depression, we got to talk about it. If we suffer from bipolar disorder, how are we going to manage it and find solutions for it? But that's the point we're trying to make is we got to help each other find solutions to make life easier.
Yep.
When I see professionals, mental health professionals, pushing the narrative of it's okay to be fat, that or obese or unhealthy in this aspect of people who are 400, 500, 600 pounds, that is not okay.
I just had a thought and I agree with you 100%. But I wonder if it's almost triage work, just another thing to not add to the mental health stuff. So try to ease, they're going about it the wrong way. This is maybe the way that I'm trying to think of there.
Can you explain that better for me?
Yeah. Yeah. So basically what I'm trying to say is there's so much going on in this world. There's so much divide in this world. They're trying to take things away, but this isn't the right way to do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I see where you're coming from.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, I don't know if that's the case, but I could see, cause this has never been a thing before, until now.
Mm-hmm. I feel like perhaps like everyone should be accepted in their own way. Like outside and like you said, going to the gym and stuff.
Absolutely.
But it shouldn't be presented as like the pinnacle image on like page one, like you said, of like, this is what you should look like and then work.
Yeah. This is fit. This is healthy.
This is healthy.
No, it's not.
No,
let's see that blood work.
Yeah. Yeah.
For real. And I'm not discounting your mental health or your feelings because those are 100%. You probably feel like shit and you don't want to be brought up because you see yourself in the mirror every goddamn day. And you know that you look like shit and you know that you're going to feel like shit and you know that you're wearing extra big clothes or you're avoiding people. And we know that.
Now we're not discounting like dad bod, mom bod, or just anyone who has a slightly average physique. Like maybe when you bend over, you have a slight roll in your stomach, like a little bit of extra weight is fine. I can't remember the number for women, but I know the healthy number for men is 15% body fat.
Yeah. For women it's 24.
Okay. I can't remember that number. But yeah. So like, we're not talking, everybody needs to be shredded with six pack all the time. That's not realistic either. That's its own level of unhealthy. Like people need to be at a point where they are able to get up, walk, run, play, go get their groceries, like do basic things and not feel like horribly held down. And also at the same side, you keep saying it, the blood work has to show that you are healthy.
Yeah, right.
And that is another part I do want to bring up because you're right. A lot of therapists keep saying that this is healthy. But there's also a lot of doctors, a lot of people that go to their doctor and the doctor says, yeah, you're pretty healthy. You lose a couple pounds. This person weighs 400 pounds.
You could lose a couple pounds. And it's just like, well, no, you should lose half your body weight.
Yeah. And then you have all these doctors now prescribing, you point out the name of it. It's that diabetic medication that causes you to lose weight.
Yeah. Metformin.
Metformin. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Metformin. They're putting on people on Synthroid.
Yep.
Just loading them up on pharmaceuticals that, to be honest, they work.
They do, but
the damage is irreversible.
Yeah. They don't teach anything about proper eating habits or trying to break those issues you're having.
Yeah. You're going to continue doing what you're doing, just taking pills that are
you're destroying yourself.
Here's a perfect example. I love my doctor to pieces, but he's not a dietitian. When I was diagnosed with IBS, he gave me the FODMAPs. And it's just like, don't eat this, try this, and keep a journal of what you're eating. It's like, well, no, you got to start from scratch. Go down to your basic nutrient, protein, and then add food in and see what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
His approach was like, how'd you fix yourself so quick? And I'm like, what are you talking about, man? It's almost like the actual conversation of health does not exist anymore.
No.
And what bothered me about and I'm not saying it was one person, it was like 10 or 15 people I saw on Instagram pushing this narrative. That is not okay, because this is 100% a mental health issue. When we have somebody that's 400 pounds, 500 pounds, that's a mental health issue. And it needs to be considered a mental health issue, and there needs to be solutions for it. And the solution is psychotherapy and diet and exercise. Yep. Like, you know, how many issues in their life could go away if these people just walked around the block and went and saw their therapist?
Yeah, I think a lot of people, like, they really think that we're just trying to drive home this point that you need to kick your ass. No, that's what we like to do.
Yeah.
Don't have to do that.
No, we love lifting weights, doing crazy things. But like most people say, well, I don't want to do what you do. I'm like, okay, awesome. I'm not telling you to do what I'm doing.
Walk around the block.
Yeah. And like, so people always ask me, what's the best kind of fitness? And the best kind of fitness is the one you enjoy doing.
Yeah.
I enjoy strength. If I come to somebody and they say, you know, I love CrossFit. Don't get me wrong. I make CrossFit jokes a lot, but I also watch the CrossFit games and I have so much respect, and I have my favorites I root for because of the stuff they do. And if that's what you enjoy, if you enjoy CrossFit, if you enjoy powerlifting, if you enjoy Zumba, awesome. The biggest thing is making sure whatever fitness you're doing is actually causing you to push a little bit, because you have all these people that have done Zumba for 10 years and look the same. Now, granted, they're not changing their diet either, but they're also not actually challenging themselves.
No physical exertion.
No.
Yeah. There's if anybody's interested in hearing anything about actual health from the doctor side of things, Dr. Peter Attia is a huge resource on this. He talks about the markers of strength and cardio are how, when you're 80 years old, can you still grip onto a door handle? Can you still open things? Can you still hold yourself up if you need to get off the toilet? He's like, the markers of strength and fitness are way smaller than we think it is. It's about keeping ourselves within our proper BMI. It's about keeping ourselves within a proper cardio and VO2 max limit and range. Well, and he's not talking about people who are, you know, our age, 30 years old. He's talking about where you want to be when you're 70 to 90 years old.
Law of physics, a body in motion stays in motion.
Right.
I tell all my clients that actually, because it is longevity. If you keep moving, the body will let you keep moving. So when you start stopping and sitting still, that's when things start breaking down.
Totally. Any counterpoints to that? Anything else?
No, I think that was a good,
new guy.
There.
Well, just pretty much off the top of my head, not really. Not really any counterpoints with I find it weird though, like you say, with the stigma and kind of devil's advocate, I find it weird how, like, as a man, you have to, like you said, have a six pack and look a certain way and be a certain level of muscular. Mm-hmm. And like, you can be called out for that. But with women and all that, when like they're overweight, they're on the front page, you can't say anything about that. Mm-hmm. You have to accept them for how they look and how they are as a person.
Totally.
Imagine, this is opening up a whole new can of worms. And I don't think I should do it.
Open it.
But at the end of the day, think of if it was an overweight man on there.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Pretty sure both genders wouldn't be too happy with it.
Yep. Well, I hate to say it, guys, but you've never seen a men's health magazine with a heavier version of Jonah Hill.
Yeah. With a,
you might've seen him when he was skinny.
Seth Rogen.
Yeah. And it's always the men's, but look how they lost weight. Look how jacked they are now. Mm-hmm. It's not saying, oh, look, he's eats what he wants to. And he's happy and healthy.
Yeah.
And you're right. Like, early Jonah Hill was not on there. Right. And like, you won't even see someone with the current norm. Like I said, the dad bod. Mm-hmm. Dad bod is currently very, very accepted. Women are saying, like, yeah, we love and stuff like that. And I'm a believer that's a decent representation for average health, most people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're not seeing even that on a men's health magazine.
Mm-hmm.
You're not saying, okay, this has a level of fat.
That's why is that? Is it a feelings thing? Because you have a good point, and you it's not really a can of worms, because we know that. So the dad bod, do you know how the dad bod got started?
I don't actually know.
Okay. So basically the term dad bod came from, I'm assuming it was pseudo medical community, because what happens when a father has a child, their testosterone starts dipping and lowering. And the reason it starts dipping and lowering is it's putting you in a state of maternal state. So it wants you to basically keep as calm as possible. So we know with higher testosterone levels, kind of butchering this, but it's basically the synopsis. Higher testosterone levels give you more energy and they want you to be more aggressive. And when that baby comes, your maternal instincts kick in. Paternal instincts kick in with the baby and it relies and makes you more calm in that scenario. Well, what happens is the lower testosterone then creates more adipose tissue. So more belly fat.
And there's also another piece to it. I can never remember the term for it because I don't think it's an English word, but there's actually a studied thing where when, as women gain weight for pregnancy, men will naturally gain weight as well.
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. There's a certain term for it. I can't remember what it is anymore.
Yeah. It's a lowering of testosterone.
It's lowering testosterone, but it's also a change in habits as well, mm-hmm. because something in your ancestry will tell you, okay, if she's getting weight to protect the child, I need a little bit of extra weight to help take care of the child as well.
Sympathy weight.
Yeah, sympathy. Sympathy weight is the term for it. There's actually
a medical term
for the mental process, not just the hormonal, mm-hmm. the actual mental process of what happens. Totally. And it's actually very accepted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think it might come down to the fact that we know that if you have a dad bod, there might be some hormonal issues going on and you can very much and easily fix hormonal issues with diet and exercise. Yeah. So I think it's well known for males specifically that if you're out of shape, there's a few key markers that you can focus on that'll get you in shape instantly. Totally. And when I say instantly, 6 to 8 weeks of eating good steak, you know, eating some greens and doing cardio and weight training, you're going to get in pretty decent shape.
Well, even don't just like, long. never mind weight training, just movement.
It's movement.
Yeah, yeah. Staying active, getting off the couch. Like if you're sitting there all day and you know, you're not like, you know, taking the kid in the stroller and going for a walk, mm-hmm. like start with that and make sure. And one thing that would throw out there for anybody is protein. The daily protein content is a huge thing when it comes to proper body mass index. Not body mass index, that's the wrong term, because I hate BMI. But just better body calibration. Getting enough protein in around most of your meals is actually very important. And if you just change that, it actually does hormonal responses. It helps your body better maintain a healthier weight.
Yeah. Totally. Yeah.
Like I've been on the couch for 2 months. I know if I put in a solid 90 days, I'll be exactly where I was, where I wanted to be, or where I was.
75 hard.
You could.
Yeah. Well, when I was opening
my figure something out.
I got to post it soon. When I was up in my gym, I got to about 270 pounds because I was so focused on everything else. I wasn't eating properly. And all I was doing was like office
work. Side I sent you? Yep.
No, I'll show it to you later. Okay. I got to post social media at some point, but I'm sitting in my gym at 270 and I look fat.
Hit that stress eating a little bit.
Wasn't even stressing. I was forgetting to eat. And then I just like grabbed something quick and cheap, like you said, kind of like McDoubles. And I think a month or so or 2 months, I dropped a bunch of water weight, was feeling back like myself. I had energy back and everything.
Yeah. It doesn't take long, guys. No. It doesn't take long. The next point, next thing I want to talk about with you guys before we get out of here is today. This is going to come out Monday. So this is Wednesday. Today was Bell. Let's talk. Let's face it, guys. That's a lot of controversy around this. I don't know about you guys, but I barely saw anything on my social media talking about it. Basically, like TSN was talking about it. A couple bigger corporations were talking about it, but it was pretty minute.
I seen like it was like on Twitter, at least there was like a complete divide. There was either a lot of sports analysts that were in for it and then ones that were not only damning Bell, but damning the analysts. Mm-hmm. It was like just another line of division.
Well, we know why the analysts and journalists are going to go on because they're getting paid.
Totally. Yeah,
totally. We understand that. But it's very, I had two people reach out to me today and say, what do you mean? And I'm like, so I told them the story and they're like, you've got to be kidding me. And these are people that are in quote unquote power or authority positions here in Medicine Hat. Yeah, like, I had no idea.
This information is readily and easily accessible.
Mm-hmm. So I know we talked a little bit about the Bell Let's Talk thing, but I'll get into it in a second, like get everybody the full story. But so every morning I get on the treadmill for about 20 minutes. And what I do on the treadmill these days, because only 20 minutes, is TikTok. Because you can waste a lot of time on TikTok. It makes 20 minutes treadmill go by really quickly. Mm-hmm. And so I'm on TikTok and the amount of negative things I saw on Bell Let's Talk in that 20 minutes, I learned some things about Bell that I did not know.
It is wild.
And there were people just slamming Bell Let's Talk Day, but with facts, articles, specific information, citing their sources. And like, there's the stuff we talked about, but there were so many more things afterwards that I was like, holy crap, this is a company that says they're all about mental health and have a day for it. But this is what they're doing behind the scenes that no one's focusing on, because they can put their nice little picture on it. They've been at it for years and they just go, let's talk mental health.
Yeah, yeah. No, it deserves the platform that it's getting right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And don't get me wrong. This is anecdotal. This is Twitter we're talking about,
yeah.
But the things that I were seeing about people who were going, again, this is hearsay. This is just allegedly people going to their administrators and saying, I need mental health pay, or I need this, or I need that. And them saying, no, we're firing them or discontinuing their benefits, 'cause they know they're about to use their therapist. Like, wild accusations.
Well, and Dylan, you know, the numbers you mentioned this morning, can you tell exactly what happened with COVID?
Yeah. So at the beginning of COVID, there was the wage subsidy program. So anybody that was in small business, we know some people that took $40,000, pay their employees. Basically, there's an incentive to pay it back. But companies such as Rogers tell us they took $60 and $90 million. Bell took $129 million in wage subsidies. And I believe that was in August 2020. And last year today, they announced, I think it was like a 45% layoff of their whole company. And they did it via Twitter.
Yeah. Some of their employees didn't even know until they saw the tweets.
Which is a tweet and it's like, boom, lost your job.
Yep.
Yeah.
It happened to Dan O'Toole.
Yeah. So Dan O'Toole TSA. Got to work and he was told to go home. And so we talk about, and then all the allegations against them came out, and then you realize that they just took taxpayers' dollars, are wanting you to donate to them, where we don't know where the money is going technically, because they never disclose it. And then all of a sudden we have this whole movement of 45% of the people in the company have lost their job in Canada on the mental health day. Like, they couldn't even wait till the Thursday.
And one major stat that we you and I just talked about, Dylan, yesterday, I believe, or was it maybe even today?
No, that was Texas A&M yesterday.
Yeah.
This is crazy.
So not only did you say that you're a big mental health advocate, you created one of the most leading items that's happening right now, why mental health is created.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which is loss of employment.
Yeah, 1% of employment unemployment leads to a 5% increase in psychiatric care.
And let's remember, usually those COVID payments were specifically to help pay your workers that you can't currently fund. That's one of the main purposes they're there. So they took all that money and then almost half their staff.
Yeah, and who and God knows what happened to that money.
Well, and that's so the point I was trying to make on my Facebook earlier today was if you're going to support people, support local. That is a big issue that we are seeing. The biggest issue that you're seeing in the mental health realm, specifically in Alberta, because I don't know how the other provinces work, is the who's who of who's getting money. I actually saw some comments of on Michaela Fry. Shout out to our MLA. She's been awesome for us. She got us our grant. 100%. She's reached out to us whenever we need. She's donated to our raffles. She's been fantastic. But I saw a gentleman comment and said, well, where's all this money going if you've given out $500,000? And I was really thinking to myself, I don't think that there's one other organization other than like someone like McMahon, who's made Facebook posts about donations they've gotten, anybody who's disclosed or been transparent about the money they receive. And it's wild to me.
Well, and one thing that I think a lot of people don't always realize is that, and feel free to edit this out if you guys don't agree with it, because I know it's kind of a touchy subject. When most big box stores, when you go to the checkout and they ask, do you want to donate $2 for our cause? And I'm sure you guys have heard this before, but one of the biggest reasons they do that is because at the end of the year, they donate all the money that we donated for the cause. So as a customer, let's say, like, you know,
10,000, like the Children's Foundation,
10,000 people donate, let's say $20,000. They then get a massive tax credit. These multimillion dollar companies that are then they get a tax credit that they're not paying for, that we are paying for them and helping them save more money on taxes.
Yep. Yep.
And I'm not saying they all do this, but let's be honest, it's a very good number. So when he is dealing with,
we had to walk away from 50 grand last year.
Yeah.
Right. 'Cause we're not a charity.
Yep. Yeah. So when you are dealing with when you are donating money, especially in your city, look at the cause and donate to a local cause, if anything, because a lot of times the big companies, There's a lot of reports of the money not getting there. I'm not going to say which are the right and wrong place to donate. Maybe check it out.
I'll tell you the right place to donate.
No, for sure. For real.
There's many really good ones in town here.
Yeah.
The Intermath Project being one of them.
But they're local places. Absolutely. They're local.
One that I will say for sure that is nationally known is the Ronald McDonald House.
Absolutely.
That is one that I will donate to every single time. They have a good track record. Everything's accounted for. The money goes where it's intended. Mm-hmm. So if you don't know, that's a good place to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I've actually have friends that have had to use it because their kids are special needs.
Totally.
I might be wrong. Feel free to correct me. I've also heard very good things about the MS Association.
Totally. Yeah.
I got a buddy that has it, and yeah, they've been apparently making some groundbreaking research progress. Yeah.
The organization we try and donate to all the time is the Mustard Seed.
Yes.
I've done it from the cold. Volunteered on Christmas Day type of thing back when I lived in Calgary. It's another organization that you can definitely donate to. We have a GoFundMe. If every dollar counts for us, we're in a really good spot right now. Thanks to our community. Yeah. Thanks to the donors who continuously donate and support to us. It was really disheartening to me because and what the worst part was is when people were reading that, they're like, did this really happen? They private messaged, this is really happened. Yes, that's really happened. This isn't. And it's a touchy subject and it hits home for us because we've seen guys come into our nonprofit crying to us. We've had guys give us suicide notes. We've had guys completely change their whole life for the better because they've came to our drop-ins for 2 or 3 months. You know, these are things that you're seeing all the time. I had a gentleman call in to me today and I sat with him on the phone today for 45 minutes because he didn't know the number to social services here in Medicine Hat. He didn't know the phone number to the provincial building and he didn't know how to get a ride into town. Mm. And it's just like, cause he lives in Red Cliff.
Yeah.
And it's just like, so you're talking about a guy who really, he's just hard up. He's got circumstantial issues going on. He's got mental illness he's got to deal with. And on top of that, bills are piling up. He doesn't even know who to contact to get his shit figured out. And all of a sudden he says to me on the phone, well, what other programs can you offer? And I told him, he's like, well, those won't work for me because of my disabilities. And I'm like, I'm really sorry. He's like, I really wish somebody had something for me. Mm. And I thought to myself, how long you been in this situation? And he tells me like a decade. I'm like, where, like, don't you have a caseworker or a social worker or something? No, nothing. He doesn't have anything.
Probably doesn't even know that's available to him.
I don't even think he does. Right. So, you know, when you see guys like that, you know, that Bell Let's Talk, they ain't going to do anything like the people on the ground can at the Mustard Seed. Yeah. Or McMahon,
especially
in
a small rural city like Medicine Hat or Lethbridge or Red Deer or any of those kind of places.
They'll do big things in Calgary. I mean, is that a flashy? Maybe.
Yeah. I haven't heard of anything.
And I said, they might. And you're right. It's a big maybe, but they have to do it flashy. So they get a lot of publicity and stuff like that. People like us, people like the Mustard Seed, people don't realize what they're doing on a daily basis, how hard they're working, even the food bank.
Yeah. Well, that's just it. So you get like, okay, so at Christmas time, the root seller contacts us. Hey, we got a bunch of food hampers. We realize that we don't want to be overlapping services. We're kind of short-staffed anyways. Do you want some food hampers? I'm telling you right now, Bell Let's Talk might be doing donations, but they aren't boots on the ground like we were donating food hampers to people in their local cities. And the amount of small towns, Shane, that have reached out to us in the last year, in the Stony Plains, the Tabers, like the Coaldales of the world, Hannah, these little tiny towns and organizations saying, how can you help us? And we're going, we can't because we don't even have the money.
Yeah.
So like, when you see that, it makes you really not angry, but frustrated that, you know, something like Bell Let's Talk can get away with what they got away with last year and people continue to support it.
If an organization like ours landed 1% of what Bell Let's Talk got, we would be able to run all of our programming for free
for like a decade
and run our building could be paid for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And everything's paid for.
Think of all the programs we'd put on the back burner because we can afford them.
Mm-hmm. We have so many great ideas, so many things we want to do. It's just
if we had the funds, we would easily be 5 years ahead of schedule the day we get them.
By far.
Yeah.
Like,
so think about that the next time not just us.
That's yeah. most of these non-for-profits in this city.
Yeah.
And smaller cities.
I remember when we toured the Mustard Seed and they were saying about all the things they're working on. I was blown away how much they're doing for our community.
Yeah, totally.
Like it's tough out there for everyone right now. Mm-hmm. Not just us. So if you are going to donate, think local first. And I know that's annoying and hard to hear sometimes, but it's very true in this case. That's for sure.
But if you're trying to donate to your community.
Yeah. You can find us at www.internetproject.com and you can just, there's actually a page you could donate. So we greatly appreciate it. Like we said, we got to GoFundMe as well. So if you're on the actual private forum, you guys can check it out there.
And sorry, Dylan. And we're really open and honest of where all of our money has been allocated.
Yep.
So if you have questions, feel free to ask.
We'll show you.
Well,
in February, we're actually posting it public. So you'll be able to see our financials. So we've said that from day one, right? We want to make sure that our community knows that, hey, this is where the money's going. This is how it's being used. And that's just it, right? So with that being said, guys, Shane, any thoughts?
Nope. It's a nice one back for the last few months. It's nice to get back on the train and get going. Ted, nice having you in here.
Good seeing great being you. Here again.
Good to have our new guy, yeah, Brody. I'm excited to see the magic that you work on this show. So,
Ted, where can listeners find you?
Listeners can find me at Hebrew Hulk on Instagram, Ted Finkelman on Facebook on my business page, and HebrewHulkFitness.com.
And do you accept community donations as well?
I sadly do not, as I am a business and not a non-for-profit, but I will definitely sit down with anybody and talk fitness and nutrition anytime.
Awesome. And I'll make sure I put some links in the show notes for you.
I appreciate that.
And Brody, what do you think? This is your first podcast.
Yeah, this has been great. This has been awesome. Yeah.
It's different,
this has just been a lot of just, I've been paying attention, just how's things going.
Yeah.
But I like to chime in every now and then. That's been great.
No, that's perfect. And wow, that's where we're a lot to take in.
I feel like I should have worn a hat. For those that can't see, I'm also wearing a hat. I'm not.
Oh, you're good.
Wear a hat next time.
You're showing your amazing hair. That's like, I'm into it.
It's a good shave, though. It looks good. And you trimmed your beard, or is it coming in just fuller?
No, I trimmed it.
Oh, that's okay.
Looks good.
Looks good. With that being said, guys, again, www.facebook.com/TheInnerManProject. Twitter and Instagram is at InnermanYXH. Our Calgary chapter is at InnermanYYC. And you can find us at www.TheInnerManProject.com. Brody, you can hit the stop button, buddy. Mm-hmm.